Let's make it happen, Captain!
From deep inside the Death Star, I'm Larry Larson.
And I'm Gov Maharaj.
Welcome to Defrag. And it's a busy time here at Microsoft. Usually the summer, you know, it gets nice outside and it slows down a little bit. But no, we are full bore.
We're beyond full bore.
Yeah, we've got Windows stuff happening. We've got Visual Studio stuff happening. We've got Tech Eds coming up. We've got just,
it's a season for conferences.
Yeah.
It's the season for everybody, you know, firing on multiple cylinders and trying to get stuff done.
And it's review time. That keeps everyone busy.
Yeah, so joy and bliss unbound.
Yeah, yeah, so good times. But all right, let's get to the questions today. All right, first question from Rick. He says, I'm looking at purchasing a new laptop soon. Like you, I'm going to give Lenovo's Ivy Bridge machines a good look. I spend most of my time working in virtual machines on my current laptop, and sometimes we'll have as many as three virtual machines running at the same time. I'm considering loading Hyper-V on my next machine. I have an MSDN agreement, so I already have it, and I'm hoping that by running something like that as my host machine instead of Windows 7, I'll get a lot better performance in my virtual machines. My question for you are, have you tried this configuration? Would you recommend it for someone working in my environment, mostly virtual machines?
Yes, actually, I do use this environment for testing purposes.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily on a laptop, but on a desktop.
Yeah.
It doesn't ultimately matter that much. There are some things, you know, to be aware of when you're running Hyper-V on a laptop is that there are certain power management things that wouldn't be on because it's the whole point of running Hyper-V is to say, well, it's more likely servers or always-on machines that you're running in your hypervisor environment. Now, this has already been talked about before for Windows 8. One of the features that's going to be coming is client Hyper-V.
Yeah.
So if you're going to be doing that, I would strongly take a look at using that as your environment because that's going to get you a lot more stuff that you're probably going to use on your laptop. I would definitely look for that one. But in the meantime, since you do have the MSDN agreement, try it out with Server Hyper-V on an Ivy Bridge machine and give it a go. There should be no issues really with it, but you know, you're going to have to shut down your Hyper-Vs or suspend your Hyper-Vs and then manually shut down your laptop. I don't believe Hibernate is supported under server with Hyper-V running.
Yeah. Cool. All right, next question from Sterling. He says, in a recent episode of Defrag, Larry mentioned they had a problem dragging Favicon to the desktop because it created a desktop app. I also drag a lot of sites to the desktop with IE9 now creating branded shortcuts. What I do, which I did before, is right-click an empty part of the web page and select Create Shortcut. This will create a normal, non-branded shortcut like in the previous version of IE before V9. That's an awesome tip. I love that tip, and I didn't even think about that, which...
Me neither.
I did it a couple times,
and
I love it.
It's because I don't actually ever show anything.
View, show icons.
Yeah. I hate icons on my desktop. I really do. I'm not like you. I'm not like most people. I think that work with Windows love having icons on their desktop.
Yeah.
As a quick method of getting to things.
Well, this
I
is
like to pin.
This is why I use Stardock Fences, because if you put fences on there, you can double click on your desktop and it hides all the icons. You double click again, they show up again.
Mm-hmm.
And I do tend to have a mess of icons on my desktop at any given time, which, you know, I'll go through and clean them up once in a while.
Right.
But this is a great tip. And Sterling, there are Channel 9 guys on their way to you. Thank you so much for that tip. That was a good one that I just completely overlooked. Next question from Edie. He says, I recently bought a new external hard drive, Western Digital MyBook 3.0, USB 3, 2 terabyte. I've connected it to a USB 3 port and updated the USB 3 controller drivers on the ASUS P8Z68V Pro motherboard, and I still don't see transfer speeds in the hundreds of megabytes that I should. It maxes out around 90 plus with some spikes above, but usually stays closer to 80 megabyte, which is close to my old USB 2 external hard drive. I was wondering if you have any suggestions on how to speed it up and whether this KB may help.
So it's actually kind of interesting in that I don't see that speed too much different than on a SATA drive that is, you know, directly connected. So I'd be looking at what is the drive in the Western Digital MyBook.
Yeah.
It might need a firmware upgrade because I believe the MyBooks, they're not just a hard drive enclosure.
Mm-hmm.
They have some additional smarts in them.
Yeah.
So it could be that that firmware actually needs to be updated to take advantage of better speeds. The hard drive itself, so you got the two parts, you've got the MyBook enclosure, then you have the hard drive. The hard drive might need a firmware update as well.
Yeah.
But, I mean, 90 meg, 100 meg per second is not bad. Did you actually check if it was megabytes or megabits?
Well, he's got a capital B, but I would expect it to be megabit.
Hmm, interesting.
But I couldn't say for sure.
I mean, I kind of hope it was megabytes, because actually that's pretty decent,
yeah.
You know, when you consider it.
And 80 meg for USB 2, that sounds really high. I've never gotten anything even close to that.
I was thinking like 30 or 40 on the, USB 2.
Yeah, the best, if I see 30, I got a smile on my face. So
right,
30
right.
is usually really good for USB 2.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you know, I have a lot of USB 3 stuff now. I've got a USB 3 dock. I've got USB hard drives, USB 3 hard drives. They're the smaller hard drive, so I'm not expecting a 2.5-inch hard drive to give me really high speeds like that, unless
right.
it's an SSD.
And remember,
and
USB 3...
I even have 3... a couple of little external SSDs,
mm-hmm.
and yeah, I don't see the top-level speeds that you see when they talk about USB 3,
mm-hmm.
But
then again, I've never seen the theoretical speeds on USB 3.
I've never seen the top speeds on USB 2, for that matter.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So there's got to be a lot of overhead and a lot of different factors there. But
the
it is
cable,
faster.
You know, the cable is going to
yeah.
be a factor. You might consider, you know, upgrading the cable for it. I don't
mm-hmm.
know if that particular MyDrive just takes power off the port or if it has an external power source.
Yeah.
If it has the ability for external power, use that. I mean,
mm-hmm.
there's a lot of different things, but I don't think you will ever, well, I won't say you will never see the theoretical USB 3 speeds. It's just, I wouldn't count on it.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Next question from James. He says, I've run SFC scan now several times, and it keeps saying that I have a corrupted MFCM80DLL file. Now there are three different MFCM80DLLs with long ID numbers ending with 4053, 6095, and 0.762. Only the 0.762 is coming up as corrupted, and I've tried repairing it each time. It's not able to be repaired. I've also tried in safe mode with the same result. I've searched for it through the logs, but they've disappeared now, so I'd like to find out if there's an easy way to replace this file without affecting the programs that require it, or if it's okay to just leave it, as I don't see any immediate problems and the file came up as corrupted a while ago. I've tried searching for info on Microsoft sites, but have not gotten an appropriate response yet.
So this one came in over email, and you know we've went a little bit back and forth. I haven't got a response to my latest question, but I did ask for the SFC scan now log,
mm-hmm.
and basically the only error is that there is a hash file mismatch on the files. It may not actually mean that the file itself is corrupt, but the hash file for it might be corrupt.
Yeah.
In any case, this particular file comes with the 2005 C++ runtime SP1.
Mm-hmm.
So I suggested to actually uninstall that package. It'll be in add remove programs.
Yeah.
Find that update, uninstall it, and then reinstall it again. If he's running on x64, he needs to install both the x86 and the x64 package.
Okay.
And that will probably actually fix it.
Cool. Okay. All right, next question. I know there are some tricks with older versions of Windows to accomplish this, but I'm not sure about Windows 7. If I had a piece of software executes a command with switches resulting in a CMD window opening and closing quickly, how can I reconfigure the command prompt to not auto-close once a task is complete? The trick here is that the command being executed is indeed a batch file, which includes a pause statement at the end. But the way the software is trying to execute the command is failing. Since it closes so quickly, we don't know what the error is being returned since it closes so quickly.
This is actually a fairly easy one. If you can modify the batch file depending on the chain of events for the application that's calling the file,
yeah.
If you can modify the batch file to prefix it with a CMD WACK-K and then recall the batch file, so make a copy of the batch file, and you can just chain the execution.
Mm-hmm.
And that will make the CMD window, a new CMD window, pop up, execute the batch file, and that CMD window will keep running.
Cool. Tricky. Nice. All right, next question. I'd like to change the settings of a power scheme, say go to sleep after 45 minutes instead of 30, through the registry rather than the control panels in Windows 7. I'd also like to turn hotkeys off the same way. Any suggestions on how I do that?
For the first one, you can't do it through the registry directly. They're held as particular binary blobs that don't actually have a, you know, timeout is 10 seconds kind of thing.
Yeah.
But we do have command line. It is the PowerCFG command line utility. I love this utility. I keep learning new things about it every time I want to try something new.
Yeah.
It is designed to be scripted. It is designed to be really infinitely configurable. So you can really do anything that you want with this utility, even more than what you could do in the control panel. So there's a TechNet article here on the PowerCFG command line options with some examples that you can use to set your various timeouts. You can copy existing schemes. You can set schemes as active and as inactive based on anything you really want. So you can combine this, say, with scheduled tasks, and at particular times of the day, you might actually want to set a particular power scheme to be on. Maybe if you're encoding files and you never wanted to go to sleep, you can have it set to switch to a particular power scheme and then switch back to a PowerSafe power scheme. This could work for a lot of people that have asked in the past, you know, I'm running a home server, but I also want to be power conscious.
Yeah.
You know, you can get the best of both worlds here if you say, yeah, nothing's happening really at night.
Yeah,
I can set a power scheme in order to make it, you know, be a lot more idle and go to sleep and hibernate and wake up on its own.
Mm-hmm.
During the day when I'm actually using it, I want it to be always on.
Yeah.
So you can definitely use this to accomplish that. For the turning on and off hotkeys, that one's a little bit more loaded because if we're talking about the hotkeys that come with a machine,
mm-hmm.
like the keyboard, the volume up, volume down, those type of hotkeys. That one's going to be dependent potentially on the actual OEM or manufacturer. So I think we'd need a little bit more information on that question, on that part of the question.
For hotkeys in general, stay tuned. We have something coming up here at the end of the show. All right, next question. Have you ever plugged in a USB drive or external device with a hard drive and wondered why you can't see it in my computer? I often have, and I believe my USB is not broke because if I plug in the USB to another computer, it could be seen and detected. I tried following this tutorial and the links to a link or to a site, but I'm afraid of going wrong and causing my data to be lost. Is there an easy way around this problem? Many thanks for your attention, guys. Yes, I have seen this problem. I have this on my living room computer with a drive that I had been connecting to copy a couple of videos to it to watch up in the living room. And I think this is what's happened here. I'm very anal about having that drive map as a specific drive on my desktop machine in my office. And so I set all my drives to map to certain things. You know, videos go to V, family, you know, photos and videos and stuff like that go to F. And so I had given this drive a specific drive letter to use. Mm-hmm. And when I take it upstairs, that drive letter is taken by a CD drive.
Mm-hmm.
And so it just doesn't show up. And what I typically do is go into administrator tools and...
Right here?
Computer management and desktop disk management and find it there. And I just right-click and do open.
Mm-hmm.
And what I should do is
I don't have an external drive hooked up to this, but if you see one show up, you should see it populate in disk management. If you don't see it populate in disk management, there's something else wrong.
Yeah.
At that point, you'd want to reboot with the drive plugged in, check to see if your BIOS can actually see it.
Mm-hmm.
If they can't see it, your port might be bad, try it in a different port.
Yeah.
You know, that's getting...
Check it on another computer, see if you can see it there, check your cable, that kind of stuff.
Now, if it does show up here, you can actually right-click on it, change drive letter and paths.
Yeah.
And you want to change this. You can manually change a drive letter basically to be anything that's unused.
Yeah.
And it'll keep that drive letter for that drive wherever you plug it in.
So this external USB drive, this is probably what's happening here. And I just haven't gone through this step of giving it another drive letter. And I don't really want to because I want it to come up as a specific drive letter on my desktop machine downstairs. I should just change the CD drive to go to a different letter.
That has its own set of complications if you do that after your machine has been running a while and after you've been installing stuff.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of applications and especially games that use the CD or DVD
mm-hmm.
that will store paths in config files in the registry anywhere in any kind of format, and they may go look for the CD afterwards and they may not know how to go find it after you've remapped the drive letter.
Yeah.
So if you're going to do any kind of drive remapping, do it right after you've installed the system.
Yeah.
Before you've installed any applications. If you have an OEM system, you again have some risk because of the stuff that the OEM is pre-installed.
Mm-hmm.
So there is some risk by remapping the drive letters. Not a lot of risk.
Yeah.
Stay away from trying to remap your OS drive.
Yeah. Yeah.
Don't even try it.
Yeah.
But otherwise, what I would tend to do is for the external drive, for the thing that's going to be moving around all over the place,
mm-hmm.
could rename that one to drive Z.
Yeah.
And then.
Or Z.
I prefer Z.
Okay.
And then you can almost be guaranteed that it's not going to conflict, unless, of course, you have multiple USB drives
yeah.
and they might be plugged into the same machine at the same time, which case.
And that'd be a problem on my desktop machine because I have my. My CD drive set up as Zed because I never use it and I don't want to see it as one of the first drives, so it's down there at the bottom.
So that would actually work for you because the CD doesn't move anywhere, doesn't
yeah.
move across machines. You set all your machines up to be drive Zed, then that would work.
Cool. Okay. All right, next question. My question is relatively simple, I hope. I have an otherwise fast system. 3570K SSD, 8 gig of RAM with all my data on the slower platter drive. If I replace it with a faster drive, would there be any difference in system performance, or would the difference be minimal given that the OS is already installed on the SSD?
Depends on what kind of data is on your platter drive, right?
Yeah, exactly. So
if you have video files and you're constantly doing video editing on a platter drive,
yeah.
replacing it with an SSD is going to give you some big perf gains.
Yeah.
Well, okay, maybe not big perf gains, but perf gains.
Yeah, yeah.
if you have, you know, for me, Outlook has... mailboxes, PSTs,
mm-hmm.
right? So I want to put those on a fast drive because they get indexed. They're
yeah.
constantly being indexed, so I want them on a fast drive. So it really depends on what kind of data you're talking about. If you're talking about like Word documents, you're really not going to notice any difference.
Yeah, but if you've got like Visual Studio installed on a platter drive, but you're using an SSD,
mm-hmm.
if you had Visual Studio on another SSD,
mm-hmm.
that would give you some
Absolutely.
Perf games.
Yeah, well, any applications, right? Since you said that the OS drive was already on a SSD,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to assume that all of his programs are also on an SSD, so you won't necessarily get the perf gains.
Yeah.
But it really does depend on what data that he's talking about on the platter drive.
Yeah, and in this configuration for the machine that I'm using here, I have an SSD as my primary, and I have a platter drive as my secondary. And there's a lot of times where it comes up and it wants to install a program,
mm-hmm.
and I'll just change the C to a D,
mm-hmm.
Because I don't really want, you know, that big suite of software installed on my C drive. I don't want to fill that one up. It's kind of small.
Mm-hmm.
But I realize that if I go to that drive, it's a platter drive. Those applications are probably going to be a little bit slower.
Yeah.
So,
but again, it depends
it
on your
depends
usage.
Depends on the app, yeah.
And, you know, defragment it.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Cool. Okay. Pick of the week time. Time for the pick of the week. Sharp Keys.
Sharp Keys. I had this question come up from one of my colleagues, actually. They did not like where the FN key, the function key, is,
yeah.
you know, to access some of the other additional shortcuts that are on some keyboards.
Mm-hmm.
And he wanted to remap a control key. And you can do it with this. It has a nice UI interface. It tells you what things that you've pressed, and it gives you the scan code
yeah.
of the thing that you pressed. It tells you what is currently mapped, which is really nice. You know, this is what we consider a low-level system utility, or at least
yeah.
from a compatibility standpoint. I'm not going to say it's always going to work in perpetuity for the rest of everybody's lives.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good utility. It works on Windows 7.
Yeah.
There is no reason it won't work. There shouldn't be really a reason why it won't work in the future, as long as using documented interfaces.
Mm-hmm.
But this is a very interesting little application. It makes it so you don't have to be grepping through the registry yourself,
and
which is nice.
So do you just switch one key for another, or can you have like a little script or a batch happen when you hit a key?
I believe that this is strictly a remapper. It's not a script.
All right, good enough. So, yeah, you were talking earlier about remapping my eject key on my machine here.
Mm-hmm.
I would have no problem doing that because I can always eject by opening up Windows Explorer, right-clicking on the drive, and just hitting eject.
Sure.
So, yeah, they'd give me an extra key. I could put something else there. It'd be kind of cool.
Right.
Nice. Awesome. Good tip. All right. That's the show for this week. If you want to email us, just email us at defragshow@microsoft.com. Or you can leave a comment in the show notes, but we prefer the email so we can go back and forth. We being Gove. And we'll see you next week.